why you want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam.
I have been doing a little hacking here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
God, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the May edition of In the Now. It's Slip Mode in the house.
Oh, yeah. Spike in the house.
Spike is in the house.
All your Smurfettes are belong to us.
We're going to have a few other people in the house. Man, we had to do so much to prepare for the show. I had so much. Oh, I still do. I have so much content ready. You can see I did a small little opening that
you can hear.
Might change from time to time. Yeah, it's been pretty busy. How have you been doing lately?
I've been doing horrible, actually. I've become an alcoholic, and my life is pretty much a big empty shell of self-destruction and hatred that is crumbling from the inside. So it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Well, on that positive note, we'll lead on to the positive stories. I structured this out because we have these Windows stories pretty much, or Microsoft stories a lot. And what I'm doing is that I'm going to bring the Microsoft stories up just to get them all out of the way all together. And then we'll move on to other things.
All your Bill are belong to us.
All you Americans are belong to Bill. All right. Well, this is a brief story about the Windows key leak that threatens mass piracy. Basically, Windows Server 2003, the code the key that's used for the registration process was leaked onto the internet. The leak comes from more than 2 weeks before the software's scheduled release on April 24th. A Microsoft representative made clear that the company will scour the internet looking for the leaked code. Our legal department works aggressively for that kind of thing, the representative said. Stolen codes are often traded with the software, typically on websites, news groups, or internet relay chat.
Dude. Their lawyers are going to have a field day, man. Bra. Can I call you bra?
Just call me Slip. So, yeah, that's, you know, I think sometimes those things are just leaked on purpose from Microsoft. I think it said in here...
I don't think so, man.
No. Not the Microsoft de facto. I'm saying one of their employees just kind of gets a kick out of helping out. They said something in here that it was a customer of Microsoft. I don't know if it was somebody that was... I'm not sure, but I don't know. There's been so many things that have been leaked, you know, from the corporate offices of Microsoft, and you wonder if there's a few
bad apples
or good apples.
I don't understand, I guess, how it works, because it seems to me, well, A, it hasn't been released yet, and B, you're authenticating your code with them, so therefore it seems like they should know your code. I mean, I guess it doesn't associate with, like, an IP or anything like that, but...
I think it's
it still seems like there's got to be some way of shutting it off, or otherwise, what is the whole purpose of having the code?
I think it's a code that's in the software, I'm only guessing here, that... or a key, actually, that when it tries to authenticate to basically begin the registration process with one of Microsoft's servers, that key is used. If that key is not used, then you can't register the software. So it's I'm guessing that's what it is. It's another small level of trying to implement security, saying that this is our product, this is our key, all right, you want to register, this is the process to register, once you're registered, then you can use it.
Yeah, but they can shut off, like, say, they say you can't install future service packs if you have a compromised key, so it seems like they could just shut it off so you can't even register in the first place, or that it would alert them in some way, I don't know.
Very true. I don't know, I did have a, well, I knew someone that had a copy.
Oh, oh, man.
I knew someone that had a copy.
I knew someone whose brother's friend had a copy.
Of Office XP that you can actually service pack.
I too knew of such a person. And such a person was able to use this key. to use Microsoft Office XP without any problems.
Yes. On the next story is Microsoft shares Windows CE source code. It's just another way that Microsoft's trying to say that they're doing the hip, cool thing of open source. The companies that are participating won't be charged for the code, but Microsoft will receive a royalty for each copy of CE that is distributed, whether it is altered or not. But if it is altered to work particularly in one device with quotations, value-added engineering, the modifier retains ownership of the change portions, although it must sublicense a copy to Microsoft. Microsoft pledges it won't incorporate the changed portions into CE for 6 months after the modification begins selling its product. It says that it will pay for no royalties to such alters because it is a mutual benefit. The program offers close to 100% of Windows CE source code, excluding the only code that Microsoft licenses from other countries, companies. Some source code from the operating systems include Windows 2000, XP 2003, Server 2003, is also available through the initiative, as is code for products such as Passport Manager and parts of DigitalStudio.net. So those are some of the other products that have small bits of source code that are released.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I mean, I support it. And more power to them.
Pretty cool. But will it be enough? That answer right now. No, it won't.
All right. Man, I'm missing VR. Where is that monkey?
Hey, what are you just saying to me?
I said, well, because VR has some pretty interesting things. And I'm,
so you're
and
telling me I suck, is what you're saying.
I'm saying you're not getting as deep as we need to be getting right now. We need to be getting deep and disgusting.
Okay, that opening source reminds me about the Aztecs actually had a way in which they would open a person's soul to their Aztec god, and that is representative of destruction in modern times.
I totally disagree. But that's okay. All right, well, let's move on to something else that's more important or more interesting, hopefully. Office 2000 Service Release 1 registration bug strikes corporate users, or any user that uses it. Microsoft's confirmed reports received by the register that Windows 2000 PCs running a specific version of Office 2000 have been hit by sudden unexpected requests to continually register the software with Microsoft. The glitch could leave thousands of Office users unable to continue using their product. The problem appears to center around the select customer, i.e. non-academic volume license purchasers, versions of the Office 2000 Service Pack Release 1 running on Windows 2000. The Office 2000 product registration wizard appears on an Office app when an Office app is launched and invites the user to register. There's no way to get around the wizard, and other than filling in all the details each time that you click the register, or click the register later. Unfortunately, clicking register later more than 50 times renders the Office software unusable. And Microsoft has a solution for this particular problem, but it's a 23-step process involving Windows registry editing.
Ouch.
Well, that sucks.
Yes, it does.
And I don't know if, I mean, I guess this goes back to some of the other things we've talked about with Microsoft, and they've come out with so much integration of things and stuff like that, different versions of Office that they've released for little tweaks or here and there, and sometimes they put in these, you know, registration things that are trying to, you know, get rid of piracy, but and yet they also have created other bugs in the process which create more problems for just the customers that have paid for the product.
Well, one issue that the article brings up is that supposedly the Microsoft reps have been telling people to roll back their clock 2 years as a solution to the problem, which leads you to wonder if it was an intentionally introduced calendar issue. In other words, did they purposely introduce something that would have it fault after a certain period of time? And if so, could that be in other products as well?
Definitely could be. I mean, we've talked about how people have put things in software that do things that you wouldn't normally expect. You know, Internet Explorer keeps some information about you and a file you can't delete on your machine. Windows Media Player sends out your information about what you listen to, and I'm sure lots of registration products... you know, send other things back, like your CPU stats, what's on your machine hardware-wise, what other software you might be using, things for marketing use, things for just general information that may, they don't have a use for it yet, but they're going to create one, and they're sucking it out of your PC.
You know what? I'm happy to say that I have not bought a Microsoft product or anything for Microsoft in, like, at least 5 years. Even though I use Windows, but my company bought the computer, it was out of my control, but I have not given them 1 cent of my money, and I'm happy to say that.
Awesome.
Can you say that?
I can actually say that the time I bought one of my computers, it did come with Windows 2000. I did pay for that, obviously. It's on the pay. But other than that, I haven't paid for anything else. I will admit that I did pirate programs that I was using because I didn't want to pay high amounts of dollars. And all I was really was doing was learning it. I wasn't using it for a business or anything like that. Everything on the show actually has been produced using Linux, and it's very sweet. You know, actually,
there's one. You do have a Microsoft mouse. I'm seeing right now. It says Microsoft on it.
Well, it was $20. It was the cheapest mouse that was there.
All right,
mouse isn't that bad. But yeah. One thing to add too, which is really neat, is that opening that I did had the portion that said "in the now" and it echoed was really neat because I was trying to figure out how can I make like a computerized sounding voice. I had a few ideas, I ran a few things, I had a few other samples that I made, and I asked the guy that makes the program, Raysound, which is for Linux and other Unix operating systems, I believe. He sent me a file back, and he actually sent me that file in particular, gave me the original file, gave me the file that he created, which is the one that you're listening to, and allowed me to use it anywhere. And
what's the name of the program?
Raysound. That one right there on the screen. yeah, really cool. Another benefit, I guess, to open source is that you can get more feedback, more interaction with the person that actually made the program, I've noticed, versus, you know, it's not like if you email Adobe, you're going to get one of their programmers to call you back. So it was pretty neat. All right. Yeah, hey, we're done with all the Microsoft stories. All right. Okay. We got some interjection there. Well, this is an interesting story because everyone keeps talking about spam lately. It's more of a big thing. I was on the Ray Moore show. He's if you go to, I think it's raymoore.com, and he did a show called Hacker Nation. He did a bit on spam, talking about you know, possible ways to prevent it, and some of the complaints about it. I'm going to read this article here. Just to give a little bit of information before I read the article, is AOL not too long ago added a feature that basically allowed you to choose select an email and say, this is spam email.
You've got spam.
Yes. And then you would no longer receive email from that host. Since they've done that, they have gotten over 1 billion submissions. The article goes on to say, America Online has filed 5 federal lawsuits targeting spammers it accuses of sending some 1 billion junk email messages promoting mortgages, steroids, pornography to its subscribers. The case resulted in about 8 million individual spam complaints from the subscribers, most of whom used the spam report feature AOL introduced last fall. Basically, they're seeking damages of 10 million plus, except defendants are like John Doe, and other people, because they cannot find all these people or pinpoint it to just a main few, and that's something that they're working on now. Most of the places that they've found domains and such were basically unlisted. The registration records for their domain had false phone numbers. AOL is also targeting spammers who use residential broadband services, such as Comcast, Roadrunner, which is also owned by AOL. But they don't have control of what they do with their service. But people are actually spamming at home. So I don't know. That's a big problem. It really sucks. I think I've discussed things in the past. Let's just say it right now. JP, or not JP, Spike, actually. Spike, what do you do to do your best to avoid spam? Give some tips.
Actually, I don't have that much of a problem with it, but just because of when I was doing customer service, I had a whole system in place whereby I would detect. Mostly, I just had a bunch of Outlook rules. I had to use Outlook because of my work situation, but I had a bunch of Outlook rules in place, and then I was able to sort the messages in a way that I was able. Basically, I would get about 10,000 emails a day, and probably 30% of it was spam, like Klez virus, just regular commercial spam, and a bunch of garbage. But I was able to get rid of. Pretty much, I would say it took me about a half hour per workday. So really, that's a lot of productivity, but I found a pretty efficient method. But now, for my personal use, I just have an Outlook or a Hotmail account, and the junk mail has, I think, maybe one spam has ever gotten through the junk mail filter. And furthermore, I don't think it has ever cut a real spam, so it works really well for me. And at the office, the admins use a solution that works really well. I never see any spam, so... But I still very much hate it, personally.
Well,
what do you do?
Yeah, those are really good tips. That's one thing to do is use the software that you have to block the spam that's out there. Usually it's not very complicated. It's pretty easy to pick up. I don't do that because actually I don't have any spam to where I need to filter. But what I do to keep myself out of the spam system, which...
Which is the most crucial aspect.
Yes, which has worked pretty well for me, is that I don't put my email... on any sites. I don't use it for any registration. I don't put it on any, like, what I mean by sites is if you post to a bulletin board. Basically, I don't give my email address or send it out.
Ask any friends not to put you on any mailing lists, or if they insist to email you and a bunch of other people to BCC you. I know my name has probably gotten on some things from friends that email me and 80 other people.
Yeah. So basically, I don't put it out anywhere. Now I do have, like Spike had said, he had a Hotmail account, but you can get a Hotmail account for a different reason. That's his main account. But there's another reason you get a Hotmail account.
Yeah, it has a registration account.
Yeah, a registration account. So you can put all the crap that has you to sign up, all of it right there. You know, I have one that has that. It's got, you know, my eBay and Amazon.com or other things like that that need to register, or some sites that just force you to register for. You know, all those nasty reasons of selling your information just so you can get in to see some stupid thing.
Yep. And always lie on the little questionnaire things.
Yeah. I'm a female that's a CEO of a company that makes over $1 million a year.
Really? Because I am a male, but I'm a black Hispanic 46-year-old toddler.
I'm black, too.
That's really?
Awesome. But I'm a black woman.
Cool. We should hang out.
Awesome. Sweet. And then we'll create, you know, kids that make $35,000 a year and they're interested in colonoscopy.
Yeah, and surfing.
And surfing.
But, like, at the same time.
Sweet.
Do you advocate violence as a solution to spam?
I don't know, because I've never seen my spammers.
If you did, you probably would. Have you heard about the new proposed legislation that would give people a bounty to go, and if they can identify a spammer, they actually get money, and the spammer gets in trouble?
Wow.
It sounds good. And also, there's a... This is debatably good, but there's new criminal laws being passed that make spam actually a criminal violation. Which I know it's actually technically criminal to forge some of your email headers and such, but like this actually makes it a misdemeanor officially. And I believe Virginia was the first state to enact that, and now Arizona is considering it.
Huh. The one thing I did, I'm taking this one class, and it's got a pretty good textbook, and the one thing I found out that I didn't realize before, this doesn't quite help with spamming per se, but it does help with other things. Europe has a system that if a company acquires your information, that they need to send you documentation saying that they have your information, they need to describe why they have your information and what they intend to do with it or who they intend to share it. And they have, they're supposed to have with that information that they send you, the option to opt out of that and say remove my information.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's in their system of laws, and the company has to do that by law. Now spammers a little different because they're a lot harder to track as they're anonymous. But if you have a large company that's collecting data on you, that they have to remove that because in the European countries. You have a right to your data, and you have the right to say what happens to it. I'm sure there's limitations with what the government will say that they're allowed to have, but in general, outside companies do not have the foregoing to use your data without you saying so. In this country, it's a little different. If somebody grabs your data, it's free to grab, I'm sure you can sue over certain pieces of data if somebody was spying on you or something like that, or extorted you. That's different, but if they just grab data, your date, birth, loans, yada, 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 school grades, places of work and stuff like that, you do not have a right to say that you can't use that.
So I'd be interested in some of our listeners out there opinion on spam and what their solution is, and if they advocate violence as a solution to spam. So what's our email address?
It's actually, I just use the slip mode at quest.net. And put the in the header, put in the now as the subject.
And we will discuss those next on the next episode of In the Now. On the next episode, Brenda has a baby, and Slip may be the father. Tune in.
Wow.
That's $5 that you owe me for that.
Okay. So, actually, yeah, at any time, actually, people can send email there. Oh, yeah. I know we've been talking about this for a little bit. Let me add one more thing just to the spam. As well, I was on the Raymore show briefly. He actually had the suggestion of defeating spam and his idea, and he didn't have time to go into it, but his idea was to actually create a new email system. It would probably be something... I was trying to figure out what it would be. Maybe it would be something that had clients that could only talk to each certain people and you can't send me... It basically would be a more restricted... system. I actually don't know if that would be a good thing. I don't know if that's what he was advocating, but nonetheless, it's pretty hard. I mean, it's hard to stop. It's pretty hard to stop, you know, copying software and MP3s and all that stuff. All right. This is an interesting story. I know some of the people that listen to the show. This is going to be an old story to them, but it's going to be a new story to people that haven't heard this news. Basically, there was an 18-year-old man named Richard Robbins, and he did something that was very, very, very cool. He basically put 37 operating systems onto one PC. And that's quite a feat. I mean,
that is a lot.
Just getting the partitions right, certain kind of partitions on the drives. Sometimes operating systems have to be before the first 1024K sector to be able to boot. It's really interesting. All the OSs are loaded onto 6 hard drives and are divided across 5 separate booting menus with the help of a freely distributed bootloader called XOSL. The computer features 4 5400 RPM Mac stores, 1 7200 RPM Mac store, and 1 7200 Western Digital hard drive. Let's see, it's got a gigabit GA6VX-E7 motherboard. It's a 1 gigahertz Pentium 3, ATI graphics, and 350 watt power supply. And some of these OSs, I'm going to read these.
It's a beast.
It's a beast. It's pretty interesting. And he's got some really old OSs on here. It's DOS 6.22, DOS 7, DR DOS, FreeDOS, OS 2, Warp 4, SkyOS, Windows 1.01, Windows 2.03, Windows 3.1, 95, 98, Second Edition, ME, XP Pro, 2000 Pro.
1.01, that is old school.
Yeah, I even saw some pictures of that the other day. Atheos, Syllable OS, AOS BOS 5. Personal edition, one with the Mac skin, one developer edition, QNX 6.2, 6.1, all the BSDs, Minix, Storm 2000 Linux, Immunix, Connectiva, Libernet, Vector, all, you know, there's too many to read here.
And I believe that 37 does not even include the
DOS managers.
DOS ones. Yeah. So if you could only have one of those OSs, which one would you have?
One.
Shoot. There can be only one OS.
All your OS are belong to In the Now.
I'm too ignorant to say myself.
I don't know which one I would choose, actually, because I actually don't have a favorite compared. Like, I could narrow it down. I like the BSD operating system. It doesn't have Gen 2 Linux on here. I like Gen 2 Linux very much. It's got Slackware. So those are the kinds of things that I would probably narrow it down to.
So you have to pick one.
I have to pick one. All right, I'm gonna step out on the ledge here and say maybe FreeBSD with Linux compatibility.
Let's see. Now I understand you. Now I can gaze into your soul as the deer gazes into the waters. Or something like that, kind of. Not.
Spike digresses.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Sorry.
All right. Also, on to some interesting news about things that could get you in trouble.
Sweet, finally.
Things that could get you in trouble. All right, here's something that can get you in trouble. I don't believe there's a lot of debate, and it goes back to our Digital Millennium Copyright Act issues that we've had with that. The article goes on to say, a U.S. mod chip retailer has been jailed and fined. Now, this is actually a huge fine and a large amount of jail time. A U.S. man found guilty of selling mod chips on his website in breach of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act has been sentenced to 5 months imprisonment and $28,500 fine because he's hurting so many people. David Rossi, who sold the Enigma mod chips for the Xbox from the site ISO News, pled guilty to breaching the DMCA by selling illegal copyright circumvention devices last December. His full sentence is 5 months in prison, 5 months of home detention, 3 years of probation, and $28,500 fine.
Oh, man. I mean, it sounds insane until you consider, like, all the victims. Like, okay, first of all, there's the people who are getting, like, more use out of their hardware.
Yeah. Especially then, those Xbox users have more options.
I know, that's horrible. And then there's Microsoft, who is selling the Xboxes, and they're getting the money out of it.
Because people want to have more options.
And then, man, it really makes me sick that he did that, and I guess he just has to pay that price.
I think he deserves it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's just not right to give these people more options.
Yeah. The sentence will send an extremely powerful message to anyone involved in the production and sale of Xbox mod chips in the USA. Basically, the message is, screw Microsoft and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Expect a lot of mod chip makers' projects and websites to quickly disappear in the next few days.
Yeah, I'm not buying Xbox.
Yeah, I'm not, we don't buy things like that here.
No.
Well,
you gotta make sacrifices. I don't even want Xbox, so it's not a sacrifice. But even if I did, I would hope that I would not buy it.
You know, one of the biggest things, I mean, even the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, that's a lot of people are in opposition to that. And it's not small, actually. You even hear about it on the news. You even see, I've seen newscasters when they talk about something that was related to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. They know the story as well, that a lot of people oppose it. So it's not something that's small, and I think it's one of the larger laws out there, along with the Terrorist Act that was passed, that people are debating. And
Patriot Act.
Yeah, the Patriot Act. And it's funny because it seems like no one in the House is doing anything about it, nor do they actually care. I know for certain that businesses are panicking because of the Internet age and the things that it has done for the consumers, but are they actually hurting when it comes to money? I mean, you're not seeing, music artists, not having Mercedes-Benz in their videos anymore because they can't afford it. And
well, there's some who weren't already because the labels are ripping them off. But
well, yeah, that's another thing.
Man, I just can't wait till the Super Freedom Act comes out, which says you cannot leave your home without a signed letter from your senator. That's going to be great. But it's called Super Freedom, so therefore it's really good.
Are you serious?
I'm exaggerating.
Okay. But there are some things that are ridiculous. Like,
well, there was Patriot 2 that got gunned down pretty badly, but they were trying to pass it, which was basically a huge extension of the current act, not to mention that they're trying to extend the current act, which was supposed to have a limited lifespan of, I believe, 5 years, and now they're trying to make it permanent. So,
yeah, that's just more of the stuff that we've been talking about here. That, I mean, the thing is out there is that there's companies with interests, and their interests usually don't lie in you. It is the only interest that they have lying you is that you keep buying their product. Some of the interests that we've talked about are kind of counterproductive, like obviously more Xboxes are selling, saying, hey, let's buy an Xbox. You get a Linux box along with it, and you get to play on the internet with some semi-cool games, and get on there That's my propaganda. And get on there and, you know, and have their network and stuff like that. And on top of it, you know, Microsoft is now seeing the open source idea, and they're seeing the benefits of it. I don't think they're in real full support of it, but hey, that's their own business now. Because I am a non-Microsoft user. And
do you still think VR is better than me at this point in the show?
Oh, definitely. Sorry, sir.
Freaking not.
No. Right, actually, last show, me and VR pulled it off, and it was really good. But I'm glad to have you here. Maybe it's just because I know it's a Monday, and you work today, and probably have a Friday.
Okay, okay, now I'm really offended, because I think I'm doing awesome.
Okay. Well, all right. Back to things that would get you in trouble.
I'm glaring at him right now. You can't see it at home, but I am. And not in a romantic way at all.
All right. Voicemail hackers phoned it in. And basically, what they're doing is accessing voicemail boxes with default passwords and getting in and making phone calls out of them. Here's how the scam works. Oh, and the system that we're talking about is the SBC system. The default passwords that SBC issues the new users of their voicemail services are in a special format and are easily guessed. If the default password is not changed when the system is set up, it's ripe for the exploitation of malicious hackers, or just people trying to make phone calls on your tab.
Yeah.
Who have been breaking the SBC voicemail systems are replacing the owner's recording greetings with recordings of the voice saying yes at appropriate intervals. The hackers then place a collect call, typically from the Philippines or Saudi Arabia. I don't know if there actually know people there, or maybe they're just doing it because it's long distance. Or maybe they're trying to blame it on terrorists. To the hacked system at an odd hour, assuming that the voicemail system will pick up, so they don't do it during the day. AT&T uses the automated voice recognition system when processing collect calls. The recording asks whether the party who will be accepting the charges. When the hacked system responds yes, the call is connected. Once connected, the hackers have been leaving the line open for hours, in some cases for days, resulting in enormous bills for the victim. According to a network security expert, Mike Sweeney, we love you, Mike, there are a few reasons why the malicious hacker might leave the lines open. One is to just mind fuck the someone just because they can. That's official words by Mike Sweeney. But I also know that the hackers will set up conference calls this way to discuss various business deals at no cost to themselves. They might have set up the conference and just left the line up when they're done, and it's the victim dime, so why bother stopping it? Somebody this happened to, and what they said, AT&T, they talked to AT&T saying, hey, look, you know, I didn't really make these calls. Can we do something here? This is ridiculous. AT&T said that they would take 35% off the bill, and the remaining balance of that bill that they would have to pay would be $8,000. That's a lot of money.
Dude. All right, I have three comments. Number one, at first it sounds really clever, like they're doing something really cool, but then, like, it doesn't say how they actually achieve something helpful to them. It sounds like they're just trying to mess with other people for their personal amusement. Number two, you said a naughty word.
Yeah, I typically don't do that, but I actually just wanted to bring the full flavor of the story through, and that's...
Well, you brought the flavor. And number three, that's ridiculous. If they admit fault or admit it was fraud, then I would say that word to them. If they ask me to pay 1 cent, that's just totally ridiculous.
To some degree, it is their responsibility because they did leave the default passwords. Not individually, it was the person that was there at the desk that didn't change the password.
True, but then to some degree, the company has to take responsibility for assigning default passwords that are... so clear, or they could force their users to change the password within 24 hours or something.
Certainly.
So that's lax security. But yes, you're right, the user does share some of the blame.
Yeah. So they should pay something, but I think that maybe AT&T should just charge them what their cost was so they can just make it null and...
Perhaps, yes. I agree.
Awesome. And another thing that's been... well, we've talked about the Microsoft issues for this month.
Check.
We've talked about some things that could get you in trouble.
Check.
And we're going to talk about an increasing new subject that's been coming up over the last 5 years.
Not yet, check.
Is, should you hire a hacker?
Let's find out.
I'm going to talk a little bit before I start reading some of the actual quotes from this article, which is basically quotes from this debate. But one thing is that in order to know how to do security, you have to know what security is. And knowing what security is knowing what is malicious to make something unsecure. Now, you will be a hacker in some sense. Now, it's you may not code exploits, or maybe you learn how to code exploits, and you're a security person as far as... I noticed I'm missing an article. You're a security person as far as writing secure code for an operating system, which that reminds me of another article I'll get back to. It's all in my brain now. Or you're just locking up boxes. Now, to know that, you have to be a hacker in a way. If you are a hacker per se to begin with, then you know obviously a lot more about security than someone that per se that possibly knows about the theories of breaking into a system and general things.
Well, this is true. Now, you do need to know about the system to be able to secure it. But, well, I won't jump ahead, but one of the points made in the article is just because you can exploit the system does not necessarily mean that you are able to secure it. Like, I know.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we'll talk in depth about this, actually. All right, let me read a little bit of this, and this will give you some of the points that I could make on my own, but it's probably better best made by the people that have already done it. The question posed to our four panelists at the RSA Security Conference held at the Moscow and Center today, which I don't have the date, so sorry about that, but it was early this month, actually last month.
You don't have a date?
No, I don't. I know what you're going to say. Pitted hacker Kevin Mitnick against Christopher Painter, who prosecuted Kevin Mitnick in 1995. Mitnick argued that hackers, if performed, make excellent security consultants because of their nature of pushing technology to the limits and their skills in penetrating computer systems. Also to note that Kevin Mitnick is now has his own security company. Painter, now the deputy chief of computer crime section of the Department of Justice, disagreed. Criminals are criminals, he explained, and paying known ex-criminals to safeguard a company's intellectual property is like having the fox guard the hen house, which was the title of the session. I'm just going to interject in there and saying, well, if you're making a lot of money being a paid hacker versus a non-paid hacker, wouldn't you try to keep the job? Because most hackers aren't paid, unless they do it on the side.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is really dependent upon the term hacker, which is already like, you could mean 10 different things by then, you know?
Yeah. Ira Winkler, the outspoken chief security strategist of Hewlett-Packard, agreed vicariously with Painter. Winkler last weekend squashed an internal HP proposal to bring Kevin Mitnick on as a paid guest speaker. I don't know why, he was just a guest speaker. If you were a Fortune 500 company and you hired a hacker with a criminal record to test your systems, what would you tell your shareholders? He asked. What specialty skills would criminal hackers bring to the table that security experts without records don't already have? Well, they just didn't get caught, or they didn't do something really big.
Yeah.
Breaking into a computer is easy, Winkler continued. Closing security holes is a lot more difficult task. A skill most hackers lack, he argued. I'm going to break in there really quickly because I think it's the exact opposite. I think securing is easier and hacking is harder.
Really? Explain further.
Well, in general, securing... The easiest thing to understand about securing a box, one thing you're going to do is apply patches or bug fixes. Now, most operating systems have a built-in system that kind of automates it and lets you know when you do that. You click a couple buttons, boom, you're updated. Doesn't mean that it covers all the exploits that are out there, but it covers the common ones that the script kiddies are using and stuff that the real hackers using. Obviously, doesn't get released for a while, but that's the best you can do when it comes to those types of attacks. Other types of attacks can be honed by... if it's internet-based and you're talking about traffic across your internet connection, you'd have to learn about routers, firewalls, routing techniques, proper ways to build a network, what type of traffic to let out and let in. That there does take a bit of knowledge, and we'll talk about all the stuff it takes or a lot of stuff it takes to become a hacker, and I think it's a lot more complex. Another thing to do is to learn how your operating system works and run only the things you need to run. Don't run things that you don't need to run. Make sure you understand how those things, those systems or services run, and configure them with general obvious security in mind. You know, you don't want to open something up for everybody.
Don't click on banner ads that say your IP address is being broadcast to the internet.
Yeah, because it always is. And don't use weak passwords. You know, those are really elemental things. Even people that, you know, just learn how to use a computer, you could say, hey, do you think it's better to use a easy guess password or not guess password? Like, no, it's better to use a more complex password. They may say, I don't care either way, and I use a stupid password that says dog. But either way...
Dude, you just gave away my password to everybody.
Awesome. So those types of things in general, to learn that is not as tough as it is to learn how to be a real hacker. And a real hacker, I'm just going to cover some things, and if you know something else that I'm not covering... it's just because it didn't come to my mind. But most, I mean, usually what a hacker is someone that programs. They're the people that will look at other programs and do an assessment of their security, their default settings, their default ways of installing. That type of understanding, it takes a little bit deeper, because coding is not, you know, if you're an average programmer in C, or C++ or another language, you have actually learned more complex things than, per se, patching a system or just honing down the types of services you run or configuring a certain service.
I don't know. I think you have a point, but I disagree. Now, all that stuff sounds really easy to you because you've been doing it for years. You've read tons of stuff on it. And, yeah, a lot of it is obvious if you have to ask the average guy. Now, should you leave all the doors in your house open, or should you lock all the ones that you can, i.e. securing your ports, then they would answer correctly. But there's still a lot more complications. Small example, you don't want to install a Microsoft patch as soon as it comes out because you don't know what it's going to do to your whole network.
Yeah, last month we actually talked about a patch that slowed your system down 10 times.
Jeez. Okay, perfect example.
It was a patch on Windows XP.
But on the other hand, yeah, you're right. Learning how to code is a lot more difficult, but there's also, like, a lot of stuff out there. Just, you can look, I'm sure there's tons of web pages, like, how to do a denial of service attack in 10 easy steps, like a script to give you. So in that sense, the least, like, infiltrating a system at the lowest level is easier than securing a system at the lowest level. But securing your system really well, I don't know, I think they're both comparable in difficulty because there's so many levels to both of them.
Well, there is. What I'm saying is that competent security people that are closing systems, I think it's tougher to mow over kernel code and find buffer overflows or improper stack handlers and stuff like that.
You're on that level. Yeah.
You know, I'm not even on that level. See, I can. That's proof right there. Is I can do all this patching and all this stuff and yada yada yada. And I can do a bit of coding, actually, but I'm not to the level, per se, where I could pour over code. And, well, maybe I could be, I just haven't done it, but I definitely need more experience in that. And most people that are hackers, a true hacker, they're the ones that really know how the program works. Not every program, but a program, per se, or certain programs. And
that's also what they've put the effort into. Like, you don't know how to juggle
either. Yeah, definitely.
That doesn't assign it a relative level of difficulty, necessarily.
Yeah.
But read on in the article at the bottom there. I think the Williams or whatever, the HP guy, does make a good point.
After that, it says, Mitnick charged back that Winkler himself had hired known hackers, particularly from an elite group called the Ghetto Hackers, at ghettohackers.org. Winkler contended that none of the ghetto hackers he hired had criminal backgrounds. Which, that doesn't mean jack to me. Some of the members of the group claim to have spent their adolescent and teen years stealing free telephone time and software. I don't actually know which part. If you want to go ahead and take a look.
I will do that.
To let you scan to that.
Mostly just because I like Winkler. I like his name.
And we've kept this really broad, but when we close this, we're going to actually discuss some of the pros and cons of hiring a hacker for your company.
Basically, my point is just that he says... by doing that, you're kind of encouraging children, basically showing them that it can be rewarding to go into a criminal career. He says, regardless of whether or not a hacker with a record has reformed, the bottom line said, actually this is Painter saying this, is that paying former criminals big bucks sends the wrong message to the young, up-and-coming technology workforce. That's like saying the best way to a high paycheck is to go out and be a criminal hacker. Now, here's my opinion of it. Really, whether you hire a hacker or someone, whether you hire someone with a criminal record, is to me the same as hiring someone with a criminal record in anything else. Like, you can use the word hacker to describe anything. Obviously, if you're just hiring someone who knows a lot about computers and is really looking into various solutions to everything, then there's nothing wrong with that. Now, if you hire someone with a criminal record, then you're taking the risk of hiring pretty much anyone with a criminal record, whether it's computers or just breaking and entering, whatever. You need to see if they're reformed. It's not a good thing on its own, clearly, to have a criminal record. Just associating that with computers, just because you're for freedom and everything, does not make it a good thing. So, if they're reformed, yeah, but if they're just somebody who, like, stole a bunch of credit cards or something like that, then, you know, you're...
Yeah,
most corporations don't want to do something like that.
Yeah, that's, well, to me, that's not a hacker, stealing credit cards. But
yeah, so it comes down to your terminology, really.
Yeah. I believe that if you know about this individual, it's not that you were just suggested, or someone said, hey, you know, I want to be work with you, you know, but I have this criminal record, yada, yada, yada. I think you really have to know the person and trust them a bit before you could bring them into your, your company. Obviously know what they did, and if they did stupid things like credit card fraud, telecommunications fraud, if they did a hack that was actually interesting, but and you know, just by reading what it was or something like that, if it seemed like it had some intelligence to it and it wasn't something really stupid.
Or they were trying to make a point.
Yeah. You could generally see possibly what kind of person they are if you're familiar with the computer community. Don't always believe that just because you hire somebody that knows about security doesn't mean that they've already done something bad.
But, I mean, once you bring morality into it, like, you're opening a whole bag of worms. You can't even begin to allege that the CEOs of major corporations like Microsoft are on any higher moral ground than
definitely
anybody else.
Yeah. It is a touchy subject because, you know, security, like I said, in order to know security, you got to know insecurity. The level of insecurity that you know may be varying from others. But I think this is the plan. This is the plan. Go out, learn how to hack, learn to do what you like.
This is not legal advice.
Don't try to do anything illegal per se. This is my advice. What you should do is... And you can learn a lot of types of hacking this way. What you need to do is get your own network. Get your own hosts. Run a few different operating systems. Go out. Stay abreast of computer vulnerabilities and things going on. Learn to code. Learn programs. Learn how to configure those programs. And then after that, exploit your own machines. Go out and be a script kiddie and grab exploits from the places that are out there on the internet. Hack your own machines. Learn how to patch those machines from those hacks.
This is your homework assignment for this month, so we want you to have it done, and we know that you're listening right now and we're keeping track, so do it.
So in that instance there, I mean, you could learn quite a bit and you're not breaking any laws. If you want to go for coolness and go break into a big company, you're on your own. But you could do a lot of that stuff.
In that case, you should also have a cool case mod like Slip has over here.
Wow, that's a cool way to introduce my case mod.
Yeah. Well, you told me I had to introduce it or I'm off the show.
That's right. So that's our suggestion, is that if you're going to do this, try not to get busted. Try not to do stupid stuff. Use common sense. And you can do a lot of exploiting at your house. And I can probably talk about cheap ways to get hardware.
So that's this week's Exploiting from Home.
How to exploit from a home. I know we talk about a lot of things in a lot of different subjects, and we move from one to the other. So I hope everyone's following us. It's just that there are so many things to talk about.
Like gazelles.
Yeah, and, you know, if you don't understand it right away, or just go ahead and play it back again, because I tend to not pace things along at everyone's level. I kind of do it at my own level and get everything out there that I can in each show. You know, there are actually some nasty... Let's go into things that are out there. Nasty exploits that are out there. There are quite a few nasty exploits that are out there now. One of the bigger exploits, which is this is a local exploit, is the ptrace exploit. That's for Linux kernels 2.2 through 2.4. There are some 2.4 versions that are patched, but those are newer ones. And that, as long as you have local user access, you run that, and boom, you are root right away. I actually used that on Dimitri.
Oh, is that what you used on him?
Yeah, along with another exploit. And then also there is the Samba exploit that is out. That is a remote exploit that gets access to your machine. A lot of people are running Samba because they're experimenting with Linux, and they still don't have access to their Windows PCs, their files, so they run Samba. That's another nasty one that's out. One of the other nasty ones is the SendMail exploit, and this is for various operating systems. It's not just for Linux. It's for BSD. It's also for Solaris. I think HP Unix, various versions, and... Believe me, there's a lot of people out there that grab this file and they don't know how to code it. They just read some small instruction, execute it, and you're off. There are a lot of hacks out there for Linux right now. Of course, they have all been patched, the ones that are publicly known. So you definitely need to go out and get your system patched.
Cabbage Patch Kids.
Cabbage Patch Kids. I could definitely talk about a few other ones, but those are some ones right there to watch. Some major ones is that ptrace, all they got to do is have access to their to your system, user or anything like that. Boom, they can escalate themselves to root just like that. And big services that are being run like SendMail and Samba have some nasty holes. You know, another good thing, too, is to actually go to Google and go to search for and say bug track. It's at securityfocus.com if you want to go there as well. And then get onto their mailing list, and you can see all the nasties that people are finding. Some people think they might have found something, and they're researching. You can kind of see some of the emails that fly by. One thing, too, is that I run a Gentoo system here for my website, slipnet.org, and I'm on their security mailing list for Gentoo Security. And they post a lot of stuff to BugTrack as well, so sometimes it's on BugTrack. Sometimes it's through their own mailing list. It tells me to go out and patch. Go out and patch. And at least that portion of my operating system is secure from those known vulnerabilities. And I've definitely tried to configure things and lock things down to limit the doors that I've opened. So this has turned into a small bit of security that we've talked about.
Yes, it has.
Which is a good thing. I think I'm going to close with just one last story. I didn't have the paper in front of me, but I remember what it was, and I thought this was an intelligent thing that Microsoft had done.
He's making it up.
Is, or they made it up, for Windows 2000 Server. They had hired hacker consultants. Hired hackers. I don't know if they had records, but they hired hacker consultants to pore over the code, and they found many vulnerabilities.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah, so they did a security audit of their own code. A lot of it was really low kernel-based code. A lot of it was information systems IIS 6.0 that comes with Windows 2003. They poured over the code, and they're actually the ones that got to see the code. You know, most people that write code for the Windows kernel are hacking code or exploits for a Windows operating system. They don't see the code, so they're not. It's a little harder. So these guys got direct access to the code. Found many vulnerabilities, closed them, found many uneducated ways of programming the code. They found better ways to program the code, more efficient, limits problems with security. So that's another good thing, and I applaud Microsoft in doing it. OpenBSD did that once. They actually took their kernel. They did a complete pour over all of their system. They patched many holes that they had found, And they brag, too, that they've only had one, I think it was just one exploit for their default install, which is really minimal. Then you add packages on top. But just their default install of their operating system, that they've had one exploit in like 10 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah,
That's it for today.
That's it for today.
Hey, can I plug a website real quick?
Yeah, I know what website it is.
Yeah, it's turzio.com, T-U-R-Z-I-O.com. And if you go there, there's articles by Spike that attempt to be cool and fail. So do that.
It will be done. Anybody can email us up at slipmode@quest.net.
Q-W-E-S-T.
Q-W-E-S-T. Also, hang out on Pound Hacker Mind. That's on the Espernet IRC server. Go ahead and go to esper.net. Check out their IRC servers and jump on. Join Pound Hacker Mind. A lot of people I know that listen to the show are there. Check out oldschoolfreak.com. They've got Radio Freak America over there. Another great show. I might be on their next show talking. Go ahead, check out Rant Radio, rantradio.com. They host the Radio Freak America show. They also host various other cool shows. The Ray Moore show, he does Hacker Nation. You can check him out at raymoore.com. And one cool thing is that our shows are being archived at audio.textfiles.com. What textfiles.com? Textfiles.com, that's a really cool place. That place is, I met the guy at DEF CON 6, I believe it was. He was a speaker, and what he was talking about was he did not want the digital age of bulletin boards and text files from back in the early to late 80s to just disappear, even early 90s. So he was accepting submissions from people that had bulletin boards, people that had text files and whatnot on BBSs and all that stuff, to be kept for posterity, and I mean, it's general coolness. You can go read it, and it's really neat. So he has all that stuff, and he moved over to having audio files and other miscellaneous things. So our show, In the Now, is completely archived up there and going to be there forever. I'm sure that those things are going to be kept for a long time. So that's great. And
ooh, wonder what kind of storage he used. But save it for next time. You.
All right. Alright, well, that is our May show.
Thanks for coming.
And one small announcement. Hopefully, if I can believe that people are going to show up for every one of these shows, we are going to move to every other week.
Whoa.
And the reason I'd like to do that is because I'd like to keep the news more fresh. And I would also like to give something, listeners don't have to wait a month to hear us.
Cool.
So,
we'll be fresher, we'll taste greater and be less filling and everything.
And, less calories.
Yeah, dude. All right. Well, this is Spike, and all your Morpheus and Neo are belong to us.
And, this is Slip Mode, saying, ouch, I just bumped my leg against the desk, and I will see you guys very, very soon.
Kick it.
So stay tuned.
Better than VR.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Someone without access to these hammers.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence that I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
In the news.